Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here and Sean Rourke out there. Sean, are you doing as well as Alex Nedeljkovic is right now? I mean, they're chanting his name in Carolina after his 32 save shutout last night. Pretty good performance by the rookie goalie.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you chant my name after I edited your story yesterday?
I chant your name every day. You just don't know it. It's always Sean, Sean. Actually, it's Rourke, Rourke. I'm always doing it, you know, awesome. Unless I don't like the changes.
I'm gonna have to ask your kids if that's really true. But so no, I'm not doing as well as Alex Nedeljkovic, which, by the way, I can spell without looking up now. So
I can too. Now I'm very happy about it.
Pretty proud of that. But what a fantastic story. There's been so many great stories in the first week, but you know, you probably put him at the head of the list as one, maybe Nathan MacKinnon, but that's a little bit more expected, and we can talk about that a little bit later on down the road. But before we get on to anything, Dan, I got to tell you, this hit me on as we're getting ready to start the podcast today. The season started, it seems like yesterday, and it's over now, and we're into the postseason. And our first guest, I don't know if you remember this, for the season, was Coach Quenneville.
Yes.
And in that conversation,
I know where you're going. Okay.
Coach Q said that he was going to scratch Keith Yandle.
Yes.
We wrote a story, but we're first with it. Keith Yandle is going to be scratched, and then he plays in the game. And Coach Q got us. And now here we are, game three of the series between them and the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And who's going to be scratched? Keith Yandle. He was out with the extras this morning. We're taping this on Thursday on the eve of game three between Tampa Bay and Florida in the first round. And it looks like Keith Yandle's a scratch again. And I literally, when the file came in, I laughed out loud that the circle had been fully closed.
That is, I didn't even think of it that way, but it's pretty darn funny. No question about it. But yeah, no, Yandle, 922 consecutive regular season games. 57 straight, never missed a playoff game, 57 straight. And again, we're recording this, as Sean mentioned, on Thursday afternoon. So game is in about five and a half hours from now. And we don't think he's going to play. So that's going to be a big news to watch. And that series is 2-0 Tampa Bay. But I didn't bring up Alex Nedeljkovic just willy-nilly here, Sean. I brought him up on purpose because our guest today is Tripp Tracy, the longtime broadcaster for the Carolina Hurricanes on Bally Sports right now with worked for years with John Forslund, now does a great job with Mike Maniscalco. He'll be joining us soon, and we will certainly be talking about Alex Nedeljkovic and that entire series. So we'll get to Carolina and Nashville at that point, and also a little more on Tampa Bay and Florida and, you know, Gandle and whatever else may come of that one. But I'm watching last night, Sean, Wednesday night, and this is where I wanted to go first with you. The Colorado Avalanche, if they were in a race against the St. Louis Blues in that game, they would have skated laps around them by the end of the first period. Nathan MacKinnon cannot be stopped at this point by this team. And this is a team in St. Louis that won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. And it doesn't even look to me, it doesn't even look like they have a chance against the Colorado Avalanche because of the Av speed, because of MacKinnon. Now, it's crazy for me to say that they don't have a chance. They're the St. Louis Blues. They're a championship type of team. But from what I've seen through two games, it doesn't look like they do.
No, and what have they done since they won the championship, right? They went out early the next year in the bubble, and you kind of excuse that to bubble life, and then they struggled a bit during the regular season. And look, if they don't have Jordan Binnington, who was not very good in the bubble last year, but has been great in these first two games, we're looking at lopsided scores.
Yeah.
It's been crazy. Look, you look at the Avalanche, and Nathan MacKinnon is an absolute freak. And you know, we talk about underrated players, and you know, he's not underrated. He's been in the MVP conversation. He's been in everything, but I still don't think he gets his due because he plays in Colorado, you know, and it doesn't get as much attention as other places. But this kid in 42 playoff games averages 1.45 points per game. You know who averages more and has played at least 30 playoff games in their careers? Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky. That's the list.
End story.
That's the list. That's incredible. Insane. And then the guy who has the most points currently that's playing is Point from from Tampa Bay. He's at 1.15.
Right.
So McKinnon's 25% better than the field. Crosby's right behind him at like 1.11. And, you know, there's a ton more of a sample size there. But I think 45 games is a pretty good sample size.
Well, McKinnon finished fourth in the playoffs in scoring last season, and he played half the a little less than half the amount of games as the players that finished ahead of him. I mean, yeah, it's remarkable what he's able to do. But let's not forget here, okay? Because let's not look over the fact is they're up 2-0. Everything's good with Colorado. We're recording this now before we have news on Nazem Kadri. There's going to be a suspension there. And by the time you listen to this, it might be out already. That hit, you're protecting a lead, third period. Nazem Kadri goes and does that. And now he's going to be suspended for how long, we don't know. Like I just said, that's a big loss for Colorado. Is it going to impact them the rest of this series? I'm not so sure. But I'm watching the other two teams that play in this West Division, Minnesota and Vegas. They're going to need a Nazem Kadri in those games. No question about it. And I don't know if he's going to be able to play in those games either if they get through this first round.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, he's been offered an in-person hearing. I would assume that it would take place over Zoom. It's not a true.
It's a Zoom hearing. Yeah.
And then that invitation comes with the knowledge that you can be suspended for six or more games. And if anybody knows this, it's Nazem Kadri. This is his third such example in the playoffs. He did it twice with the Toronto Maple Leafs with disastrous outcomes both times, right?
Yeah.
He got Wingles and he got two games for that and 17, I think it was.
An 18. And then, and then DeBrusque and then in 19.
Yeah, right. In 19, he cross-checked DeBrusque and that was in game two. He got the rest of the series. So he was out for the last five games. They lost in seven and they kind of fell apart because they didn't have that depth that they needed to play against a really good Boston team. So, you know, this is not a one-off for Nazem Kadri, and it could affect them, but look, I think, you know, Vegas or Minnesota might be a little bit of a different story, but you look at this Colorado team and basically if you can dress McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Makar and Girardi. In Girard, maybe you could dress Dan Girardi, or maybe you could dress the baseball manager Girardi as the fifth guy, and you have Grubauer in goal.
You'd have a shot.
They're going to give anybody a go, right? Look, Cale Makar has been ridiculous. The way he moves around on that blue line, especially on the power play, there's nobody like him in the NHL. There's not another defenseman that's like him in the NHL. He's a unicorn. I mean, he truly is in what he's able to do and how he's able to do it. And then, you know, there's really good players on really bad teams that you look at and you say, oh, wow, he's really talented. He's that talented. And then he's got guys of equal or better talent that he can get the puck to. So, I mean, we're gonna talk a little penalty killing later in this segment, but I can't imagine the fits that he must be given St. Louis's penalty kill coach.
He's so smooth. Like, that's the thing. Like, everything he does is just so smooth that even if you think you got him, you don't. That's how smooth he is. So look, we'll be talking a lot about Colorado. They're not going away anytime soon. So I think we got a lot of Colorado to come. And again, the news on Nazem Kadri's suspension for the hit on Justin Faulk, which was not a hit you want to see anybody make in the league anymore. And totally unnecessary. We'll see what comes of that. You'll have the news probably by the time you listen to the podcast, or maybe shortly after. Anyway, let's move on. The Canadian division, North division has started. You've got one game down. Winnipeg beats Edmonton 4-1. We're going to get to that in a minute, Sean, but I wanted to touch on Montreal, Toronto. So it starts, there's hype. Everybody's looking forward to it. Hey, if it gets to game six, they can even have fans in the building at the Bell Center, which would be unbelievable. What is Montreal Canadiens coach Dominique Ducharme doing here? I don't understand why you are not playing Kotkaniemi, Cole Caulfield, and Alex Romanov. I don't understand it. And you're looking at it and saying the inexperience factors in here. I think this is way overthinking it. Look, he's the coach. He can make his own decisions. He's got Brendan Gallagher coming back in. He's got Shea Weber coming back in. I get all that. Carey Price will be in net when they play game one against Toronto tonight. But, I mean, Kotkaniemi played 56 games this season. He had 20 points. He was good. Romanov played 54 games. He was a big part of that team. And Cole Caulfield has 4 goals in 10 games. You need goals to score. You need goals to win. Yeah, and Cole Caulfield scores them. You're going to need probably more goals than you want to need to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs just because of their high-powered offense. Cole Caulfield scores them. Why is he not playing in game one?
I don't know. Because the coach is doing what he thinks is best for the team. And you know, you look around the league and you see all the rookies that are playing. I mean, we just talked about Alex Nedeljkovic.
Yes.
He's a rookie.
He's a rookie. 25 years old, but he's a rookie.
Yeah. Well, he's still a rookie. He's never played in a playoff game. And, you know, Rod throws him out. You know, and I go back to what Brian Boucher said last week on our podcast, right? A veteran is built to come in. He mm-hmm. understands, right? So now you're going to get behind maybe in this series, and then things are going to get desperate, and then you're going to go down the line, and you're going to say to 3 kids, hey, you weren't good enough to play for me at the start, but now I need you to come in with your fresh legs, and I need you to save our season. It's the other way around to me. You put those kids out there. You see what they can do, because all you want is a split out of Toronto, right? So you put them in game one, you see what they have, what they're able to do. You lose that game, you haven't lost anything. A, you're expected to lose. I mean, Toronto's one of the heavier favorites. Them and Colorado are probably the two heaviest favorites in the first round. So you expect that to happen, and you haven't lost anything. But now you do it the other way, and you don't know what they have.
Yeah.
When you finally get around to tapping them on the shoulder and saying, hey, oh, let's go, you're in. You don't know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get from the guys that are playing in their place now because they're veterans and they've done it before. So to me, I would certainly do it the other way and try and get a baseline on where they're at. I mean, Cole Caulfield, he scored big goals everywhere he's been. Like, you think about this year, he scored 30 goals in Wisconsin. He comes up to the AHL, scores, I believe he scored the game winner in his debut, right? No hesitation, no thought of, oh my God, I'm making a jump, I got to do this. Comes into the NHL for one of the most storied franchises, scores on almost every other game basis. Like, the kid's never shown an inability to score. Why can't he make the jump to the playoffs?
I don't get it. I will not, even if they win. Even if they take 2 in Toronto, and I still won't understand it. I think it's a bit of overthinking here. We'll see how it plays out. How about the other one though? So you get the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers, right? Everybody's picking Edmonton. No question about it, right? They dominated the regular season against Winnipeg. McDavid is just, I mean, he's got 900 points this season. It's incredible, right? 4-1 Winnipeg. Game one, Connor McDavid. -2, 2 shots on goal, no points. Leon Draisaitl, -2, 4 shots on goal, no points. I mean, should we be surprised? It's the playoffs. It's different, right? Winnipeg's got more playoff experience. I understand that. Connor Hellebuck's a really good goaltender. Should we be surprised, or should we just be like, just wait? It's coming in game two. McDavid's going to light it up. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he scored 7 points in game two.
Fool me once, Dan, it's my fault. Or it's your fault. Fool me twice, it's my fault. Again, let's go back to an old show. Remember my maybe one of my first rants. Connor McDavid, not an MVP candidate because he didn't score in 3 midseason games against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that's not what MVPs do in big games that are on the line. And what did he do after that? I think he went on like a 25-game run of scoring multiple points, or at least it seemed like that. He ended up with over 100 points, and I said he wasn't an MVP candidate because he didn't score in 3 games. So you're not going to get me to do that again. You can lead me down that road. I'm not going to put myself in that position again. And look, I think he had 22 points against the Jets in the regular season. But I think, you know, I told you this as we were doing our playoff previews. If there's any coach in the league who can figure out the Edmonton Oilers with a system, it's Paul Maurice. And now, not only did they win 4-1, they did it without Nick Ehlers, and they did it without Dubois, Pierre-Luc Dubois. So, you know, and those guys are getting closer, and they could come in. But what they did it with is they did it with Connor Hellebuck. And he was Connor Hellebuck, Vezina Trophy winner Connor Hellebuck. Like, you know, goalies are a different breed, man. When they're right in their heads, they're impossible. And you know, I don't know that Connor has been right in his head. You know, he got pulled a couple of times down the stretch, told Paul Maurice he was wrong for pulling him. And you know, you wondered about where he was mentally. There was no wondering on last night. I mean, he was brilliant. And you're going to have to be. You're going to have to get that from him for however many games this series lasts.
Yeah, well, he's got to be the difference maker every game. I mean, you say that about every goalie. I understand that we could say that about any goalie in a playoff series. But in this series in particular, with the firepower that the Jets are facing, they're not going to be able to limit Connor McDavid to two shots on goal every game and no points. And same with Leon Draisaitl, four shots and nothing. And, you know, there. Even though, look at the stat, it's interesting to me. The Jets won 29 of the 48 faceoffs in the game. They won 60% of the faceoffs in the game. Connor McDavid lost 11 of his 16 faceoffs, and yet the Oilers still outshot them 33-22 in that game. So even though they weren't winning faceoffs, they were still getting the puck. They were still generating chances. And McDavid said it right. They had a little bit of a nerves going on in the first period. He liked the way they played in the second. And eventually, look, in the third, you know, Hellebuck becomes a difference maker. But he's going to have to be that again. I think, honestly, Sean, I will see. I mean, maybe we'll be able to replay this audio next week and I'll be dead wrong. But I think game one's an outlier. I would be shocked if it doesn't reverse itself here in game two.
No, I would be too. And look, in the last 10 games that Connor's played in the playoffs, he has 18 points.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not worried. You know, they, you know, I think they've learned some lessons. For me, the key is going to be at the other end. You saw what you're going to get out of Connor Hellebuck. It's going to be what the Edmonton Oilers get out of Mike Smith, who, since he went deep with the then Phoenix Coyotes in a series, I believe that you and I covered when we drove from LA to Phoenix in the middle of the night to do the start of that series against the Kings in the Western Conference Final. He's been bad in the playoffs. He hasn't had a lot of chances. It was a one and done with Calgary, and then it was a true one and done with Edmonton in the bubble last year. He played that first game and got absolutely shelled by the Blackhawks and never saw the crease again. It was Koskinen who finished for them. So he's got to be the goalie he was in the regular season, and he hasn't had a ton of playoff experience to find that groove. And to me, that's going to be the difference in this series.
Yeah, we'll see. So the North is underway. You'll get Montreal, Toronto going first time since 1979. Let's go tonight. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. One final thing before we get to our guest, Tripp Tracy from the Carolina Hurricanes broadcasts, the Washington Capitals and Boston Bruins. So Boston, all three games go to overtime so far. Washington has started three different goalies already. We knew goaltending was going to be an issue for the Capitals. It already is. Vanecek gets hurt. Anderson plays well, gets a win. He doesn't play. Then he plays well, but doesn't win. And then he doesn't play in game three. And Samsonov plays for the first time in 19 days last night. And I thought he was really good. I mean, he faced a lot of work. He was really good. And then in overtime, he makes an error, a miscommunication with Justin Schultz, and it costs him the game. That's it. Craig Smith read it. The miscommunication with the puck. Craig Smith read it. They score the goal. So, I mean, Sean, what do you make right now of where the Capitals are? Down 2-1, overtime losses. Ovechkin finally gets on the board, but they've played three goalies, and the guy that played well makes a mistake now. That's probably all he's thinking about right now.
Yeah, look, it's tough. I mean, I thought that the Craig Anderson story was unbelievable. I mean, here's a guy who spent the whole season on the taxi squad, played two games, you know, hadn't seen his family, you know, was the perfect soldier, you know, setting the tone for all those other guys on the taxi squad about how you approach your job. And then he finally gets his chance. Vanecek gets hurt. He comes in, he plays well in the second game. He's winning that second game late. And we're actually talking it story-wise, like, oh, we got to do the big backstory on Craig Anderson. Like, that's how fast the playoffs change, right? We're like, we got to do this big Craig Anderson piece. He's unbelievable. And then they lose in overtime. And then we're still talking about that. And then out of nowhere comes, oh, Craig Anderson can't play. He needs a day off, right? And understandably so, like, he hadn't played hockey in forever, and he plays two high intensity playoff games with a lot of work. To me, that's the biggest thing is the the offensive zone possession time has been so much in the Bruins' favor throughout this series. They've just had them under pressure forever. And Washington's been able to get a couple of leads and, you know, alleviate some of that pressure, but Boston's been somewhat relentless. And then, you know, he played, Samsonov played unbelievable when you think about it. It was a pretty warm day. So, you know, the Garden, although there weren't, it wasn't a full house, so it probably wasn't as hot as it normally is in there, but it's a warm day. You're sweating a lot. You haven't played hockey in 19 days, and now you're going to play a high intensity double overtime game against a Stanley Cup contender, a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And you know, you're going to have to play two overtimes, and eventually you're going to get tired. And to me, that was a fatigue mistake. You know, he kind of went back there and it looked like he forgot what he wanted to do. And then all hell broke loose and he couldn't get back. It literally looked like, you know, his brain short-circuited for a minute. And that's what happens when you're tired. You know, sometimes I do this podcast and I can't think of somebody's name, and it's the same thing. It's that momentary short circuit and nobody notices on the podcast. But when I do it behind the net, trying to play a puck in double overtime, everybody knows.
Yeah.
So what do they do now? That's the question to me. You know, what does Peter Laviolette do tomorrow in game four? Vanacek's out. He's not available. Samsonov is available.
Anderson
skated today. They had an optional. He skated, so he's going to be available. You know, what do you do? Do you go with the 40-year-old guy who you signed as insurance after you lost Henrik Lundqvist? Like, that's the other part of this Anderson story that's unbelievable. He shouldn't even be in the NHL right now if rosters settled like they did. And so do you go with that guy and continue that story, or do you go with the guy who's supposed to be your number one going into this year, but made a huge mistake in game three? I think it could be the most pivotal decision of the series.
I think you go with Samsonov. I think it's actually an easy decision to go with Samsonov. And the reason I say that is the team itself needs some stability to know that their guy is going to be there, and he's been more of their guy, right? So that's number one. And it also is a future decision here, because you need to see what Samsonov can do through the playoffs. You have to make a decision in the offseason when this is done. Who do you protect from the expansion draft? Vanacek or Samsonov? Both of them cannot be protected. One of them has to be. And if Samsonov plays the way he did in game three, continue, and just doesn't make that pivotal error, you know, I mean, I think he's your guy. You got to go with him. Anderson's a great story, but Anderson is not the goalie for the Capitals that's going to get them out of this series. I don't know that either one of them gets them out of this series, to be honest with you. I think the Bruins are going to roll now, but we'll see. I think it's got to be Samsonov. But anyway, Sean, I'm not even going to give you a chance here to say who you think it's going to be. Who do you think it's going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be Samsonov, but I don't know that it should be. I mean, look, they didn't even want to play him in game three. They had to. The most amazing thing about this whole story is they didn't have a third goalie. They didn't bring their black ace with them. So Phoenix Coffley was their backup. If somehow both of those got hurt, I don't know what would have happened. But they didn't even want to play Samsonov. And look, twice he's been punished by the team this year, right?
No, I understand.
At the start of the year and then right before the playoffs. Like, how much faith do you have in this guy at this point? I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there to consider, but I think it's Samsonov. Anyway, let's get to our guest. We recorded the interview already. Trip Tracy with Bally Sports does the broadcast with the Carolina Hurricanes. Terrific job. And he was able to join us, talk a lot about the Hurricanes and Predators series, give us some goaltending tips as well. Here's that interview with Trip Tracy. Trip, thanks so much for joining us. Canes country's bumping now, huh? I mean, the building's packed. It looks great out there. What's it like?
Dan, my friend, good to see your face. You know, it's been unbelievable, obviously, with the journey to get to this point. You know, and I go back and I think about all of the first rounds with Carolina, dating back to my first round in the late 90s in Greensboro against the Boston Bruins. I don't think that there's ever been an atmosphere, even with just 12,000 fans, in a first round. It was close a couple of years ago with the Washington Capitals in that great series, but it just shows the tangible growth and passion in this market from the Caniacs for this unbelievably exciting team.
Okay, and I think we've forgotten a little bit about what that means, right? In hockey, what it means for the players, what it means for the broadcasters. How much different was a game with that atmosphere of that many people that into it? Does it change the experience for you as a broadcaster? I know it does for the players.
Yeah, Sean, it's good to see you. It does. You can just feel it. I think it, I sat down with Sebastian Aho right before the playoffs and I asked him about this specifically and if he feels nerves, and he says, no, the more the fans, the more the enthusiasm. I thought he said this very well. It enhances your focus to be that much sharper. And that's what I think it does for me. As a broadcaster, you want to be able to bring your best in the playoffs. And all the years that I obviously enjoyed those experiences with John Forslund, we know his level. And now Mike Maniscalco doing a heck of a job. I'd like to think that it enhances my focus too, to be tighter, to let the game be the show. And again, having called the games in the bubble off the monitor and then without fans and then limited fans, I think that it really creates the type of focus that you need to have from a less is more standpoint for a broadcaster to be your best.
The fans played a role in your post-game interview last night with Alex Nedeljkovic, and I thought that was great. And you just let them play the role there. Just let them chant his name and let him hear that. I mean, tell us a little bit about this guy, Tripp, and how he's been able to do this. This is like the Cam Ward story all over again.
There are a ton of similarities, and then there are some subtle differences, I think, between Alex and Cam. The similarities are self-belief, and you have to have that alpha in you. I mean, I can remember it happened sometime in college where, as a goaltender, where I went from expecting to win and relishing the moment to hoping I wouldn't give up a soft goal in the moment. What did that put me on the Concorde to the TV booth. So I know, I'll tell you a quick story from this year with Alex. I believed in him truthfully right from his first game a few years ago in Vancouver. Cause you could see he had that it factor. But he told me, maybe about a month ago, he said he had a coach between the ages of 10 and 14, that coach has since passed on. And that coach told him, you have a choice. You can either believe in yourself or choose to not believe in yourself. Either way, you're right. So why not choose to believe in your capabilities? And the other thing is, I think it was his first start this year in Columbus. Dan, they lost 3-2 late. I think Jack Roslovic scored a goal. And I reached out to him the next day. And I said, I thought, Alex, you looked comfortable last night. And his response was, Tripp, I can and I will dominate in this league. I chose to keep that to myself. But I loved hearing it because you have to have that. In particular, say in this division, if you're going to beat an Andre Vasilevsky, or down the road, a Marc-Andre Fleury, you have to believe that you're better than that guy. And I look over here, that's a stick of Marty Brodeur, among others there. That's his favorite goalie. And Dan, I remember when Johnny McClain was here coaching with Kirk Muller. Marty Brodeur was playing in an outdoor game. I think it was Yankee Stadium. And he got pulled 4 or 5 goals. And John McClain said, the beautiful thing about Marty Brodeur is he won't think any of those goals were his fault. And he'll just move on. And it's not that, the winningest goaltender of all time in the regular season wasn't accountable, but you have to have that belief in your capabilities. And that's Alex Nedeljkovic. It was his favorite goaltender for, among other reasons, puck handling. And he has that true belief between his ears. And the more the pressure, the more fun he has. That's what we always talked about with Cam Ward. His dad told him at a young age, and he wrote it always in his career, a marker and a stick, to say, have fun. The more fun you have, the better you play.
And he's kind of, to me, it seems like he's a reflection of that entire team. Like, that's the motto that the team goes under, you know, going all the way back to the start of the surge with Williams and everything else to now. Like, when you watch these games, these playoff games, in a way they look like playoff games, in a way they look like nighttime pickup games. Like, there's no fear, there's no sense of there's too big a moment from almost anybody on the ice, from Jake Bean to the most experienced guy.
Amen. Right on the mark, Sean. And when I look back to calling the games of the 2005-2006 team in the regular season, the eventual Stanley Cup champions, that was a veteran team. You know, a bunch of guys that had played a long time and hadn't won the Stanley Cup. Glenn Wesley, of course, Rod, Brett Hedekin, Doug Wade, Ray Whitney. So it was different from the standpoint, this is a young team. But the biggest common thread in that regular season that then extended into the playoffs and has been there so far for this team is the resilient, go for it nature. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. The aggressive attacking system and ideology of head coach Peter Laviolette, who was Rob Brind'Amour's favorite coach, the coach he took the most from. And so that attitude is a definite common denominator, Sean, that team and this team. But if you're going to play that way, you need goaltending like you had then from Gerber in the regular season, Martin Gerber, and then Cam Ward, or from Nedeljkovic, Peter Mrazek, James Reimer. To play an attacking style like Carolina does and to have that type of attitude, you need the big saves to reinforce the belief the way you're playing is the right way. And both of these teams absolutely share that in a very impressive manner.
Trip, last night, they have to kill 7 power plays. All right. I mean, you don't want to have to kill 7. You want to kill less than half that in a playoff game, but they do that. Give me your read on how they did it, why the PK is and was so effective, and just, you know, that kind of playing off that, you know, you're going to, if you play an attacking style, you know, sometimes you're going to make a mistake here and there, and you've got to be able to believe that you can make up for it. Right.
Yeah. I think that the biggest thing is that there's an intangible, Dan. When Rod got the job, I remember Rod called me. You know, he had hired my old captain in the American League and Jeff Daniels as an assistant coach to run the forwards. And he was in Vancouver, Rod, visiting his parents. And he said, I'm going to interview Dean Chenault. And I didn't know Dean at the time. And I don't know why I couldn't, because his dad was a legend, Ed Chenault, in the Western Hockey League. I couldn't even pronounce his name. I mean, I don't know why, but Dean Chenault runs the penalty kill, and Dean Chenault has done an excellent job. But what Dean would say, yes, it's built on pressure. If a team is going to beat you with skill to handle that pressure, you tip your cap, you make them earn it. But what has impressed Dean running that facet has been that the players have taken ownership of it. It's become their penalty kill. And whether it be when he's healthy, Jacob Slavin, Brett Pesce, Brady Shea, Jordan Staal, they have relished the role of being able to make a difference in the game when they hit the ice for a penalty kill. You know, because it's a different mindset than a power play. You know, the power play, you get your cookies. Penalty kill is where you have to sacrifice the games for sale if you want to pay the price. And so it's the swagger and the pride that these guys have taken in owning the penalty kill. Last night in particular, you know, you guys are in the New York area, and it's always great to see in normal times, say if we come to Madison Square Garden. And knowing that Jacob Slavin may not play, I talked to Brady Shea on Tuesday night before game 2. And I was just doing my prep and how much ice time he can play, he can handle without his play falling off. He's around 17, 18 minutes in game 1. He said, well, I actually played as many as 25, 26 minutes with the Rangers. And Dean Chenault has told me Brady Shea has an eternal lung with his capacity. And I mean, Shea played 11 minutes in the first period. You know, he continued, tapered off a little bit, but he was in the mid 20s. Brett Pesce, I think, is the most underrated defenseman in the National Hockey League. And he's right there in the conversation as the most underrated player. It was just remarkable, pressurized killing. As good as Nedeljkovic was, the majority of his good saves were not killing penalties. As a matter of fact, Carolina outchanced Nashville's power play. They had, through those seven power plays, Carolina actually had more chances. It was a thing of beauty. And, you know, you can live without a power play. You want to have both. You can live without a power play being successful in the playoffs. The Boston Bruins did it years ago when they eventually won the cup against Vancouver. But you can't live without a good penalty kill. And it was one heck of a story last night.
You mentioned Jacob Slavin, and to me, you know, as much notoriety he's gotten, he's still underrated. I think he's one of the top 10 defensemen in the league right now. He didn't play in game two. Rod said, you know, this is going to be something that goes on throughout the playoffs. What's your sense of his availability and what we're going to see from him, you know, throughout the course of the playoffs? Clearly, it's something that's not going to heal tomorrow.
Right on the mark, Sean. I look at it like this. It's situational. He obviously, the lower body injury, there's something there that he can play with it. You don't want it to get worse. And it's important for a player when he does play, and Slavin was very good in game one, that he has that belief that it's not going to get worse. But in the big picture, because I truly don't believe you're in trouble in a playoff series until you lose a game on home ice. I mean, that's what I was preaching a couple of years ago when Carolina dropped the first two in Washington and eventually came back and won. They were never in trouble until they dropped a game at home. But because you won game one, Sean, you could be more cautious with Slavin in game two. And now maybe you can be more cautious on the road in Nashville. But I still think this thing is totally in doubt until Carolina is able to win a game in that raucous atmosphere in Tennessee. But I think we'd all agree, wouldn't we? In the first three rounds, if you eventually are going to challenge to win the Stanley Cup, somewhere in there, you have to have a short series. Most teams that win have a short series. And so with whatever Slavin is dealing with, that's the carrot that you're trying to reach out and grab, that you really need a short series that you can get him rest. I don't know what will happen if Carolina is able to advance with the Canadian division just getting going, that you could get a decent separation between rounds. But in order to win, they're going to have to find that somewhere, because you cannot win the Stanley Cup way down the road in July without Jacob Slavin being a critical piece to it. He would be, if you guys said, Sean, Dan, if there's one player you don't want out of the lineup, you can make a very good argument that player is Jacob Slavin.
No, I would probably make that argument if I was talking about the Carolina Hurricanes. So now they're up in the series shifts. If you're Rod Brind'Amour today, what are you talking to your team about? Where are necessary adjustments to be made? Because it's not like Nashville is going to just fall apart here and go away, right? I mean, they're going home. It's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a great atmosphere. What's other than not taking seven penalties, what's Rod talking to the team about today, do you think?
Dan, I distinctly remember, I referenced it a minute ago, I remember being outside the building before I jumped on the bus to go to the airport after Brooks Orpik scored in game two in Washington 2 years ago to give the Caps a 2-0 lead. And I love the way Carolina was playing. And I talked to a couple of guys, and I can remember those conversations on the way home, and said that, yeah, you guys are going to win this series. You can't look at it that you have to beat the Stanley Cup champions at the time 4 out of 5 times. So that seems like climbing Mount Everest with no oxygen. But if you just look at it and say, we've got to win game 3 at home, then that seems very achievable. And then you try to win game 4. So if I were Rod, and I wouldn't be surprised if he'll do this, I'd remind them of where Carolina was at, because that's what Nashville's going to say. And Nashville played a damn good hockey game last night. And then I would also mention, because the strongest message doesn't come from the coach, and Rod knows that, and he's brilliant with this. He let the leadership guys in the room deliver that message. It's infinitely more powerful. And that was the move that Tampa made it a couple of years ago, led to a Stanley Cup. Carolina stuck with their young core after getting beat by the Boston Bruins and eliminated by the Bruins for the second consecutive time. Allow this group, yeah, they're young, but they have a good amount of playoff experience, to learn these hard lessons together. So my hope would certainly be, as they jump on the plane to go to Nashville today, that they remind each other of where they were at a couple of years ago, and that Nashville's going to be trying to deliver that same type of comeback. And because of that, they will have the awareness that they've got to be at their best to pluck a game away from, you know, the Preds in their own building. You know, guys, we always say it's the fourth one in a series, the toughest one to win. I don't think that's the case in this series. It's going to be the one in Nashville that's going to be the toughest one to win to advance.
Without giving away any state secrets, what's Nashville's plan? How would you approach, knowing Carolina as well as you do, what's their route to get back into the series?
They've got to find a way to obviously convert on their power plays. And I think that they have to find a solution to make that one extra pass on their man advantage that then leads to that penalty. If it's a 5-on-4, the penalty killing box to truly get spread out, and then you create your golden opportunity. You know, for Carolina last night, Sean, their A unit, their power play had gone cold in the tail stages of the regular season, and that carried over to the beginning of the playoffs. So what ended up being the game-winning goal last night, I had it for me that if that A unit didn't score, Aho scored, I'm making a switch. I'm somehow getting Teuvo Teravainen on that top power play unit. So I said at the time, they need to convert here, because I think an adjustment would have been made, and they did. And it ends up being a beautiful tic-tac-toe goal from Hamilton, brilliant pass by Svechnikov to Aho. But prior to that, what did you have? You had puck retrieval, you know, work before skill on a power play from Svechnikov, from Jordan Staal. You had a willingness to establish the shot from Aho right prior to it if you back up the replay. And that leads to opening things up for the skillful nature of that goal. It's always work before skill. For Carolina, of course, the book would have been coming into this series that you have to, you're going to have to win in the trenches. Carolina can be soft. I don't buy that narrative because I've seen it this year that the Hurricanes can push back. They will push back. In terms of an actual weakness, again, it's dependent on if Slavin plays or not. I would try to get back to the Preds' physicality that can be particularly impactful in their own building. But I think a team that started to score goals, period, Sean, is going to have to find that type of solution on their power play that we saw in the chronology of Carolina's power play goal last night.
Tripp, I wanted to end my last one for you on this, and it's not associated with your series there, Carolina-Nashville, but you're a goalie guy. So let's talk about Marc-Andre Fleury and appreciation that we have for him. We're watching a Hall of Fame career, I think, here without question. But it wasn't long ago that there was talk of just, you know, he would be going by the wayside in Vegas, and it's Robin Lehner's net, and here's Marc-Andre Fleury doing what he's doing already in the playoffs and doing what he did all season. Do we appreciate him enough?
I think the media does, because he's always been a media favorite for all the right reasons. He's real. He has personality. You can feel, you can reach out and touch how unselfish he is. And Jordan Staal here in Carolina, of course, played with him when they won the Stanley Cup in 2009. And I distinctly remember, Jordan's told me a bunch of times, Broder was like this too, that before game 7 in Detroit, right up to warmups, you could talk to Marc-Andre Fleury about anything. If Dan Rosen's hovering down by the locker room in Joe Louis Arena, you guys, you know, I could truly see it, that it could be 15 minutes before warmup, and you could be, you know, Dan Rosen and Marc-Andre Fleury could be talking about something totally unrelated with hockey, and then he might look at his watch and say, oh, I got to go get ready for warmup. I mean, that's special. That's rare. I will say I took note of one particular in the game. They ended up losing game 1. Cam Talbot was brilliant. But it's a mechanic that, and it ties back into your earlier question about Alex Nedeljkovic. He has such athleticism. I caught this way for those watching on YouTube, but I had a horrible glove hand. And because what you can't do, and which I did, is I established a low position. An NHL shot, you cannot catch up to a puck high. Okay. You have to establish a high glove position. And then if it's bar down, you give yourself a chance to make the save. You can, and then you can come from high to low. So I'm watching last Sunday, and Tristan Jarry, everything to the glove side. And you could see that, you know, his glove position was not what it should have been. Nedeljkovic, I remember talking to him about a save he made on Patrick Kane. It was because, and he confirmed to me after the game, he established that high position for a smaller goaltender. Marc-Andre Fleury, in that game one, he did it in game two, too. But he is one guy because he's so athletic that he can establish, Dan, a lower glove position, and he can still catch up with Flair to a puck that's targeted for the upper half of that, maybe off the crossbar and in. That athleticism is so rare and so unique, because I think in so many occasions in the NHL, you have to put yourself in position to get hit. And I just watched his glove in particular the first two games in Vegas. He has so much athleticism. He can actually establish it lower and catch up to a rising puck. And that is special.
It's almost like he baits them. It's almost like, yeah, he baits the shooters into doing it. The last one for me I wanted to ask you is, I know you're paying special attention to the Florida-Tampa Bay series because it's what's next on the agenda if Carolina advances. And you're probably more familiar with those two teams than any other teams because you've called eight games against each one of them. What surprised you about that series?
I don't know that, Sean, you would say that Kucherov hitting the ground running like he has surprised me. But it's still surprising. I just think that Tampa has their absolute swagger. They didn't finish the regular season very well. Florida's had a terrific year. Game one was as entertaining of a game as I've seen in a long, long time. So nothing surprises me with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So there isn't anything that jumps out to me. I would say individually, Andre Palat is a player that everybody would love to have. You know, Braden Point gets his proper due, but in a lot of ways, Palat is a straw that stirs the drink. And you think about, you know, before he left to go to Detroit, that the way that Steve Yzerman built that team through the American Hockey League, from the go on out, after getting beat by Columbus, after one of the top President's Trophy efforts in NHL history, could have made changes after they got swept by Columbus. They didn't. I have to think that what Carolina has done in sticking with that young core, I think the majority of that is because Rod Brind'Amour, who I had as coach of the year, and really made that message clear to management that he wants to stick with the young core as well. But Tampa doesn't have any holes for me. That third line, you know, they've had some health issues, but in Gord, in Coleman, in Barkley Gaudreau, I think they're as important as any element of that team is to their success. It has surprised me that Florida dropped two games on home ice. I think Florida is still searching. They've got an issue there, guys, with the present and the future with this Sergei Bobrovsky contract. They have a wealth of riches with regards to all the talented goaltenders they have. But with the contract that Bobrovsky has now and for, you know, the future, with everything that is good there, everything. And I think Alexander Barkov is as underrated of a player as, I mean, he's flat out a superstar. It doesn't look to me like he's 100%, but Tampa has come in clearly with their mojo intact. And they just, I guess it surprised me a little bit that they could just, with Stamkos and Kucherov coming back in the lineup, that they clearly just switched that switch from off to on.
Yeah, they definitely have. Trip, great stuff. Great analysis. I love the story on Fleury and the stuff with Nedeljkovic as well. Really great catching up with you. Thanks so much for doing this.
Well, Dan, Sean, thank you. I mean, Dan, you and I, we go way back, and I have supreme respect and admiration for both of you guys. So having me on it's a thrill. So I have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there from Tripps. Thank you so much to him for jumping on with us, Sean. And, you know, I mean, look, he makes a really good point, I think, when he's not necessarily talking about the Canes and Predators, but about the Panthers and Lightning, who he obviously is very familiar with. The Bobrovsky situation, man, that's a tough spot here for the Florida Panthers, right? So Chris Drieger is going to start game three tonight. He started game two. He made 26 saves. Bob made 35 saves. He wasn't bad in game one, but he wasn't good enough in game one, and they lose it. This guy's got five more years on his deal, paying him $10 million per on a cap hit. Are they, I mean, is this a, and they got Spencer Knight, who's probably ready to go. They got Drieger, who they could re-sign if they want to. I mean, Panthers have a goaltending issue here, don't they?
They might have a goaltending issue, but before we even get to that, I got to circle back to Tripp.
Oh, okay. All right.
I got to circle back to that interview that we just had. And I just want everybody to know that Tripp Tracy's been in the NHL for a really long time. He covered a Stanley Cup champion, been to a couple of Eastern Conference finals, been to a lot of big events. He's number one on our list, and we've had a lot of great guests. He called this the thrill, a thrill to be on at the Rink podcast. And I agree with him. I think it is a thrill to join us. But I just wanted to point that out, that there's a few things on his resume that might rank a little higher than at the Rink podcast, but we're in the conversation, so that's good for us. So now back to our regularly scheduled programming and the Florida Panthers. They do have a goaltending problem, and I don't know if Chris Drieger is the answer either. I mean, here's a kid that spent years in the minors, and you know, do you put stock in this year and say, okay, he's just a late bloomer, he figured it all out, or is this the deal with the devil year, and you get the Chris Drieger that you had before next year? So, and what are you going to do with Bob? Maybe you make some sort of side deal where you give him to Seattle, right? Like, yeah. Who knows? It'd have to be a sweet deal, but maybe, you know, you figure out some way to do that. And because by all accounts, Spencer Knight seems to be the real deal in the limited time he's had this year and just his resume. But it certainly is a problem. I can't believe that Sergei Bobrovsky's in a good headspace right now, not playing as the number one and not that far removed from being a regular Vezina Trophy finalist. So it's a hard thing. But you know what? Joel Quenneville's never been shy with his goalies. He's one of those coaches that doesn't really give a damn about how his goalies feel. Yeah. He didn't care how Crawford felt when he started Darling over him in that series against Nashville a couple of years ago. He just doesn't care. He does whatever he thinks is best for the team, and there's no coddling of goalies or players, for that matter. Their mental, not their mental well-being, but just their psyche, right? Being hurt. Oh, I got to worry about this guy because if I sit him, I'm going to lose him. Oh, well, then I lost him. The other guy's better anyways. You know, that's just the way he coaches. So I still think Florida has some life in this series. I don't know why, but I don't feel like it should end here.
No, I think they have life in this series. I absolutely think they have life in this series, and we'll see how it goes. But it's an interesting situation there with Bobrovsky and the Panthers going forward, not necessarily in this series, but going forward. So there's that. Now let's turn our attention here to Vegas, Minnesota. This series so far is playing out how I thought it would. Sean, you know, tight, grinding, hard hockey, 1-1 series, a 1-0 overtime game in game one. And then Vegas comes back after falling behind 1-0. They get a quick goal after falling behind 1-0 in game two and win it 3-1. Fleury's terrific. Talbot's been terrific. You look at this series and these two teams, I'm starting to wonder here if Vegas is really going to lament not winning the President's Trophy, not getting first place in this division, because if Colorado continues to do what it's doing against St. Louis, they're going to come in fresh, you know, into a second round series. And one of these two teams is going to come in pretty battered, I think. And that's going to be an interesting way to see how this plays out.
Yeah, no, I think so. And it's been a goaltending series from the start. And I don't know if anybody thought that was going to be the case. Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, is a great goalie, and they have Robin Lehner, and they finally ended their alternating of goalies, and Marc-Andre has the job for now. And I wonder if it's till a loss or if he's earned it with the first two wins. But I got to reference something here. We did, before the playoffs started, we did a I took your turf and I did a Super 16 for goaltenders instead of for playoff teams. And the way we did it was you could have any goalie you wanted. It wasn't the number one on each team. So we had all 16 teams. There were some teams that didn't make it onto the list. Some goalies that didn't make it onto the list. And Cam Talbot was pretty low on that list, and expectedly so. I think if you rank those goalies, he'd be pretty low. And he had given up three or more goals, I think, in his last six starts. So they've gotten something out of him early on, and I wonder how long he can keep it up. But the other one that didn't make the list at all, and I'm still getting email hate about it and Twitter hate about it, is Jack Campbell didn't make our list. He was like number 20, and you know, Maple Leaf land is in a tizzy. You know, this guy set a record in the NHL, you know, blah 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 blah. I still don't think he's one of the top 15 goalies in the league. I think that's a system thing. There's a reason why he was a backup his whole life, and you know, there's and we'll see in this playoff series. To me, that's Toronto should be heavily favored. That's their one Achilles heel, is their goaltending.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I don't think Jack Campbell should have been on that list. I would be shocked if he was on that list. But yeah, so we'll see how this Vegas Minnesota series plays out too. I think it's going to be a hard, long series. And I picked Minnesota, and I know a lot of people didn't, but I just like the way that they play against the Vegas Golden Knights. And Pacioretty didn't play in games one and two, so I think that's a big miss right there, also for Vegas. Lastly, before we hit on a quick note and get out of here, the Islanders Pens sit on this series a little bit, so that's 1-1 going into game three as well. And as Tripp pointed out, right, Tristan Jarry struggled in game one with the glove hand, and the Islanders realized that, and they were shooting gloves side, and the right thing to do was to do that. He came back and had a really strong performance in game two. This series has sort of played out through two games as I thought it would, and I don't know if it's just me, Sean, but it's flipping back to the Coliseum. I'm like, I don't have a read yet. You know, I just don't have a read on where this is going to go from here with these two teams. Do you have a read yet on this series?
I do, and it's probably going to be wrong. But my read on this series is that the Penguins are starting to put it into gear, right? They lose game one, and now you start thinking, we got swept by them last time. The Islanders have our number. And then they win to send the series to what's been a house of horrors for them for the next two games. And I think this game three will be important, you know, but they might get Malkin back in this game. He's doing more every time. And you know, you can talk about Tristan Jarry. Like, he was good this year. And if there's glove hand problems, they didn't develop overnight. And every year we get this glove hand story. You know, in the first two games, four goals go in on somebody's glove hand, and all of a sudden it's the most suspect thing that ever happened, you know, and oh my God, Roberto Luongo, he can't catch anything with his glove. He's the worst. And then somebody goes and looks up the numbers, like Kevin Woodley for us, and says, oh, you know, during the regular season, they scored seven goals on his glove hand. He had a bad game. It's a small sample size. Of course, yeah, when you notice a weakness, you're going to go for it. But what the goalie then does is says, everybody's going for my glove hand. Now I'm going to make an adjustment. Just like Tripp said, you put your glove up a little higher. You think about it a little bit more. And it's that cat and mouse game of figuring out what a weakness is, answering that weakness, then finding out what the next weakness is. And it's going to go on all series. If the New York Islanders score 10 glove hand goals this series, I'll do my latest mea culpa after the series is over. But I don't think it's going to happen. He's on that list that we just talked about of the top 16 goalies in the playoffs, and he's probably somewhere right in the middle. So I think he's going to figure that out. And I just think that I think the Penguins have more depth, and I think they have a third and fourth line that can answer the Islanders' third and fourth line, which they didn't have when they lost to him last time.
Well, then it becomes a scoring issue for the Islanders too, right? Yeah. I mean, it's as it's been all the time, a scoring issue. You know, I mean, Varley gives up a bad goal to Brian Rust early in game one, makes up for it with a really good performance after that, but they lose 2-1. Or game two, I'm sorry, but they lose 2-1. So it's a scoring issue for them. We'll see. I tend to agree with you here. I just don't see the Islanders having enough offense to get out of this series against a team that just has more firepower and more coming as well. So that'll be interesting to see. Last thing before we get out of here, a little off-season news and note here. John Davidson, Sean, he came back home to go for the New York Rangers. He's now going back home. to the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, he's fired by the Rangers.
The man has a lot of homes.
Got a lot of homes. You know, he comes into the Rangers, and that was his dream, to work for the New York Rangers in this capacity. He couldn't pass it up. Everybody in Columbus understood this too. Like, if there was one team he was going to leave the Columbus Blue Jackets for, and the role he was in with the way that team was building, it was this job with the New York Rangers to be their president. He gets the job. He gets two pandemic shortened seasons. He gets fired from the job on May 5th. 2 weeks later, he's back in Columbus now, getting hired as the president and alternate governor. Gives Jarmo Kekäläinen a contract extension, and away they go again, trying to rebuild this thing. They'll get a new coach in there eventually. Tortorella's gone. You know, I mean, unless he was going to go back into broadcasting, to me, or retire altogether, to me, this is a move that makes sense for JD, because there's so much familiarity and they know exactly how to work together.
Yeah, and they're going to rebuild it again. I mean, they have the same vision, and it's a huge offseason for them. They got to hire a coach. You know, they got to try and bring in some free agents to bolster what they lost. They got to sign Seth Jones. They got to make a goaltending decision. They're not going to keep both their goalies. So there's a ton of things to do there, and he's intimately familiar with the franchise. Two other notes before we go. One of the great mysteries of the 2020-21 regular season was just solved as we were on the air.
Oh, what? Elias, I don't know. Patterson. I literally don't know.
Yeah, Elias Patterson had a wrist injury.
Ah, okay.
They did their baggy day today.
It all comes out on baggy days, huh?
He said it's a wrist injury. He'll be ready for next season. He couldn't shoot. He was unable to play. And then the other note before we go, and it's going to get lost in what's been a great playoffs, but the World Championships start on Friday in Riga, Latvia. And it's going to be a weird one because a lot of players aren't going because they don't want to live in another bubble. So a lot of young players are getting a chance to go. But there's still, like, Columbus has 11 guys going to play in the world. So I enjoy this tournament every year, and I try and follow it as I follow the playoffs going on. Like I said, it'll be different this year, but if you get a chance, you know, to check in on it, it's one of the great hockey tournaments of all of them. I mean, it's nowhere near what the Stanley Cup finals are, but in its own right, it's a great tournament. So if you get a chance, check it out.
And this year, especially because a lot of the future of the National Hockey League is going to be playing in that tournament too. We always say that about the World Juniors, but this is a lot of guys who are young NHL players who are going to be there, as you know, in this tournament at the World Juniors. They're just young players, and some of them might be NHL players. But no, it's an interesting tournament. I know Chris Drury, the GM for Team USA, he's not there. He's got a job to do. He's got to find a coach. They're interviewing candidates, Gerard Gallant, Rick Tocchet. We've seen the reports. So lots of news and notes going on around teams who are not playing right now. But of course, the focus remains on the playoffs. And Sean, I'm going to guess that when we reconvene to do this next week, likely on Thursday again, we will be talking about how we were right on some things that we said this week, and how we were wrong on some things that we said this week. But I think we'll both be right that Connor McDavid's going to be just fine.
Yeah, no, I think we'll be right there, and we'll probably have the first of the autopsies.
Yeah.
This goes so fast. You think about, you're so excited now. By next week, there could be one or two, three teams out. It goes that fast. So it's awesome. I can't wait till next week already.
All right. Neither can I. So
it's going to be a thrill for me next week.
A thrill. It's a thrill all the time for me to just be doing this podcast with you. And hopefully it's a thrill for everybody listening as well. And stay safe out there.